Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And it is Friday, which means it's time for another classic episode of Tech Stuff. This episode originally published on January 6th, 2014. It is the first part of a two-part episode, so we'll have part two next week. But this is called Tech Stuff Bonds with Spy Tech, Part 1. It was a lot of fun looking back at the different types of gear that has been featured both in spy films and has actually played a part in espionage and various secret agencies. It is a fascinating subject, one that is filled with a lot of innovation, a lot of failed innovation as well. The Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. is absolutely fascinating to walk through if you have the time. I recommend it once things are safe to go out and about at museums again. And let us listen to this classic episode.
This is behind the curtain, guys. We had to go in and start deleting stuff because it was so much. We're like, we can't do a five-part episode about James Bond.
Yeah. I mean, over the course. Okay, so this is a phenomenon, a global phenomenon that was based on a single 1953 novel, Casino Royale, written by Ian Fleming.
Yeah, who better known as, of course, the creator of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Clearly, he wrote all of the James Bond novels that, you know, he originally created from this Jamaican estate that he had called Goldeneye. And yeah, it all branched out from there into the beautiful, goofy thing that we have today.
Yep. And there are, you know, some eras of James Bond that were significantly more goofy than others.
Yes.
I think the Moore years, the Roger Moore years in particular, got goofy.
Pretty silly.
And because there is a lot to cover, and some of it we want to relate to actual real world technology and kind of explain which ones are realistic and which ones aren't, because there's so much, we are going to do a two-parter because it's just, otherwise we would have to just pick and choose and it would be really unsatisfying, at least for us. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So, but so, yeah, as Bond himself gets most of his gear from MI6 and from specifically their Q, standing for Quartermaster Branch.
Yes. And so you often will find that the various people that Bond ends up interacting with at MI6 go by a specific letter, Q or M being the two big ones. Mm-hmm. And Q, of course, is the person in charge of giving out all of the weird gadgets. And usually at some point in the rollout, Bond a little kind of a slap on the wrist saying, could you please stop blowing up the stuff I give you?
Because all of these wonderful things, I mean, we didn't list the number of things that we're going to talk about that he has blown up, but I mean, it's safe to say that it's most of them.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not only has he blown up most of his gadgets, I think at this point he's blown up most of Europe.
No, that's accurate. I did want to note that Fleming himself was in the naval intelligence for the British Royal Naval Reserve in World War II, and that it's been suggested that because Fleming was doing a little bit of field work, you know, breaking in and entering to photograph sensitive documents, that sort of thing, that the character of James Bond was a highly romanticized version of himself.
Yeah, as it turns out, the stuff that spies really do and the stuff that James Bond does are not necessarily aligned. I mean, I don't know that there are many spies who actually have these incredibly flashy lives that bring a lot of attention to themselves. Like, I can't imagine a spy walking into a casino and winning game after game after game, drawing attention to him or herself, because that seems like it's antithetical.
Counterproductive?
Yeah, to being a spy.
Yeah.
But at any rate.
But some of the tech that James Bond uses is actually very real-world correlation.
Sure. So let's start off with one of the iconic pieces of technology that James Bond depends upon in practically every movie. Now, it's a little different from the novels series and the movie series, but in the movies, he has a sidearm, the Walter or Walter PPK. Which is the one he carries in most of the movies. There is a point where he switches from the PPK to the P99. That would be in the movie Tomorrow Never Dies. And from there all the way through to Casino Royale, that's what he's using. But then it goes back to the PPK. Now, PPK stands for Police Pistol Detective Model. And you might think, well, where does the K come from?
It comes from the German word, which is...
Oh, let's try this. Okay, so Police Pistol Criminal Model. Oh boy, I knew I'd butchered that one.
You're probably doing it better than I would. And in German, it is in fact pronounced Walter.
Yes.
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 But in British and American,
it's Walter
dialect, we say Walter.
It is spelled W-A-L-T-H-E-R, but the Germans do not have a th sound. It's a hard T or a D sometimes, depending upon what part of Germany. But at any rate, so this is a very small gun, which makes sense. It has to be concealable, right? So it's a small gun. It's semi-automatic. It's double action.
It's pretty reliable.
Yeah. It's often used in various law enforcement agencies throughout all of Europe. Both the PPK and the P99 were. And so it's one of those that you find all over the place in Europe. So it made sense. And in fact, in the novels, I think he has a Beretta.
Yeah, originally, in the first few novels, he was carrying a Beretta, until a fan named Jeffrey Boothroyd, I've clearly been watching too much Game of Thrones, sorry, wrote in and recommended more appropriate weapons in 1956, and Fleming went in and made the switch, and then furthermore honored Jeffrey by naming Q after him, the character of Q up through the point when the original actor passed away, I believe, was named
Boothroyd. Yeah,
Major Boothroyd. Yeah.
So, also, you know, in the Casino Royale movie with Daniel Craig, the jumping way ahead, but in that film, apparently he is convinced to hand over his Beretta to trade up to the Walter.
Oh, cute! I don't remember that because I've more or less blocked that film from my mind.
I have not seen it.
Huh.
I know. I haven't seen any of the Daniel Craig ones.
Oh, man.
I
really liked the last one. But we can talk about that later
yes.
on. But before we get into our big list, because it is very big, I did want to mention that there is a term for the kind of plot device that most of these James Bond gadgets are, because they are not just devices. They are plot devices, you guys.
Right.
And it's called a Chekhov gun, after Russian author Anton Chekhov and his observation that which relates to stage play more so than movie play. But anyway, don't put a rifle on the wall unless it's going to go off.
Right. If you're going to put something in a conspicuous spot that the audience sees, you cannot then deny the audience the payoff of using that. Right. You can't not use it. In fact, there are a lot of films that follow this same sort of approach. The first one that jumps to my mind, Shaun of the Dead. Huh. They look at the Winchester on the wall, and you know that at some point they're going to have to shoot that gun.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite
reversal of that was in Slither, by the way, with the grenade.
Right, but yes. That is a good point. Yes, you can also play with this by reversing it. Every rule is made to be broken.
Yes.
So let's dive in. Now, we're going to go chronologically as far as the films go, which means we're going to jump around a couple of different Bonds, but I'll explain a little bit of that when we hit there. So the first James Bond film to come out was in 1962, and it was Dr. No, and that was when they had our first James Bond was Sean Connery as Bond. Now, Dr. No is one of the movies where you see James Bond doing all of his spy stuff, but they're not really all these crazy gadgets that a lot of us associate with Bond based upon later films.
There was like one self-destructor bag in that movie, I think, and that was really the only standout tech that happened.
Yeah, and in that case, the purpose of the bag was so that it would destroy any case notes that were inside the bag, so that if Bond had been captured, those notes could be destroyed and there would be no evidence of what MI6 did and did not know. So it was purely defensive in that sense. It wasn't a weapon, it was just to destroy documents. But then we move on to 1963, to From Russia with Love, and boy, we got a very earnest request from a coworker about a particular gadget that shows up in this movie.
So earnest. Robert over on Stuff to Blow Your Mind wrote us in on both Twitter and Tumblr, where we had posted a query on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook to ask people to write in and tell us their favorite Bond gadget and why. And Robert responded in not one but two places.
Yes, he said, you've got to talk about the briefcase in From Russia with Love, which is interesting because this is what a lot of people think of as the first James Bond gadget. Now, first of all, inside this briefcase, James Bond carried a rifle that had an infrared scope in it. So that's pretty gadgety all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But then the briefcase itself has so many hidden compartments and cool things that you immediately want one. So it had,
aside from the part that I'm pretty sure that weight limitations would start to be an issue, but
it'd probably be a little weighty. It'd probably be a little heavy. Okay, so you got a rifle in it, so that's some weight, right? That also has at least one, if not two, knives in it.
Tubes for ammunition.
Right. So these brass tubes that carry bullets in them. They don't shoot bullets, but it's a way to carry ammunition inside a place without someone seeing that you're carrying lots of ammunition in.
Right. Some belts of gold coins.
That
for
might
all
add
of
a little weight.
Yeah.
50 gold sovereigns is exactly how many were in that briefcase. 50. That's a lot of gold coin. Each gold coin was, technically worth a pound sterling, but everyone used it as bullion. So, then you've got the poisonous gas that's also inside the briefcase.
Oh, right. Cause it had that trick lid. And if you didn't know the trick to opening it, then
it would go off and gas you. Yeah. So yeah, this is a pretty cool thing. And in one of those, I actually saw a video online of a fan who created a replica of this briefcase using plastic stuff for all the weapons. So like, you know, little fake bullets and plastic, but it was incredibly faithful to the original design. That was really amazing. I'll see if I can find that video and link it when we put this live.
Awesome.
See, they also had both a radio phone in the car and a pager for Bond.
Right. Both of which were technologies that existed at the time, but were really only in use for like very high paid doctors, state officials, kind of stuff like that.
Yeah. Pagers had only been around for a little while, maybe about 5 years when that came out. So it was still a very new thing to most people. They also used a bug detector. Now, this was not the only time that a bug detector is shown in a James Bond film, but we're not going to cover all of them. Just to say that this is very much spy tech. This is, you know, when you can put something that's designed to get surveillance from a specific area, whether it's a microphone or a camera or whatever. Bug detectors are a real thing. They detect different stuff. Like you might have an EMF detector looking for electromagnetic fields. You might have a broadband radio scanner to pick up any radio
transmissions,
signals.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
So this is totally something that happens in spy business all over the place.
And furthermore, it had been happening for I'd say since at least World War II.
Yeah. And in fact, you'll hear us. In fact, I'm sure we've talked about it. Perhaps it was in, I think it was our Skunk Works episode where we talked about how Lockheed Martin would have these meetings with the government and they would actually sweep the room for bugs.
For bugs first,
yeah.
Right.
In a hotel. You know, it would be a hotel that no one knew what the location was going to be until it happened. And so this is stuff that happens today all the time. Then they had a special camera that hid a tape recorder inside of it so that Bond could clandestinely record
conversations. Right.
It's funny because now our phones do this. They have both the, you know, you can get an app that lets you record stuff. You can take pictures. So a lot of the technology back then was, you know, like, let's combine these two crazy things to make another even more crazy thing. And today and we have it.
Yeah. And a lot of sci-fi style miniaturization was going on in these films, too. You know, at the time, the idea of a tape recorder that could fit into a camera was pretty wild,
yeah.
Especially to consumers for whom A-tracks were kind of the new big thing.
Yeah. 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 If you're looking at the regular reel to reel, tape recorders, which were enormous, like the size of like a small television set. I mean, these were big pieces of equipment. So to have a miniaturized version of that was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
As for weapons, special gadget weapons, some of the bad guys had some cool ones. There was one had a shoe that had a dagger hidden inside of it.
A little shootout dagger.
Yeah.
Or I guess not shootout, but retractable.
Yeah, kind of like a switchblade for your foot. You know?
Which seems like just a terrible idea if you're as clumsy as I am. I would injure myself with that so quickly and easily.
Lauren accidentally brutally stabbed herself 47 times while walking up the stairs.
Yeah, I know it would happen.
Then one of the bad guys had a garrote watch, a watch that had a wire wrapped around the watch face. So,
that you could pull it out like
yeah.
You're...
And it would just be long enough so that you could strangle the heck out of somebody. And the bad guy tries to do that on Bond, but spoiler alert, it doesn't work. Okay.
I can't believe you just told us that.
I know.
I'm sorry.
But, nothing about the garrote watch was particularly unusual. I do think that if you were going to try and hide a wire on yourself, you probably could find a better place than on your watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could easily sew it into a garment so that you could easily, you know, whip it out of there or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. You just have a little secret pocket or something, but hey, it's not as cinematic, so maybe that's the whole reason.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, the shoe dagger thing, the shoes that Michael Jackson designed to do that that deep lean
dance move. Yeah, the one in Smooth Criminal.
In Smooth Criminal, right, mm-hmm. Had sort of a similar mechanism of, I mean, you know, it didn't shoot a dagger into the stage to hold him up, but it did shoot out a little, you could trigger a little hitch that would pop down from the heel.
So I guess, hook into the stage
and
some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So
he wasn't doing that all on his own. No wonder I broke my nose four times trying to do that move.
Yeah, he was a professional.
Yeah.
Held a patent and everything.
If only I had known then. So moving on, in 1964, we get one of the most famous James Bond films. It's one of the, this is the one I always think of when I think of James Bond, is Goldfinger.
Yeah, yeah. Sean Connery is still with us.
Yes, he's still the Bond. In fact, you know, Connery does some jumping around, but we'll get into it. That a little bit later. But yeah, this is the, of course, the famous scene in this one with the big industrial laser that's slowly going to bisect James Bond. Goldfinger says, James Bond says, "Do you expect me to talk?" James Bond, "No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die." It's my favorite line in all of cinema, I think. Way up there. That one.
It's a good line.
"Leave the gun, take the cannoli." That's another big one. But they're, you know. That's obviously not a James Bond movie.
So do we have industrial lasers that will bisect a super spy?
We have industrial lasers that could bisect a super spy. I don't know that any have been put to that specific use. There may be some crazy villain out there who has, in fact, used it on a person. But we certainly have lasers that are powerful enough to do physical harm to a person. At the time, I don't know that anyone had created a laser quite that powerful. But they do exist today. But we use them for things like cutting steel, right? Like using for,
sure.
For cutting industrial uses. I mean, it's an industrial laser.
Yeah. Well, if it could cut steel, I'm pretty sure it could cut
James Bond. I mean,
he does have abs of steel.
He is a tough dude.
We'll be right back with more from this classic episode of Tech Stuff Bonds with Spy Tech, part one, in just a moment.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit att.com/hypergig for details.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Goldfinger was the premiere of one of these iconic James Bond items.
Yes. Are you talking about his vehicle?
Yes.
His vehicle. Yes, it's an Aston Martin.
Yes.
An Aston Martin DB5, to be specific.
Right.
There are other Aston Martins that appear in the James Bond franchise. And there are also other types of cars. But, I mean, some of them are, most of them are ones that James Bond, you know, borrows, let's say. For a short while, the Aston Martin is always associated as being James Bond's car. Like it's something that was developed by Q and he drives it.
I believe that they entered into some kind of like marketing agreement with the company in the 1960s, right around this film, say.
Yeah. And well, you know, and the Aston Martin is a luxury car company out of England.
Oh, they're gorgeous.
They are gorgeous cars. And the company itself for a brief while was a subsidiary of Ford Motor Company. But that was much later. It was in the 90s for like a few years, and then it was bought back. That some financiers purchased most of the ownership of the company back from Ford, which now I think owns a tiny share in comparison to what it used to have.
But with all of the switching around, has it ever had an ejector seat?
Yes. Yes, the Aston Martin, very well known, lots of gadgets on this thing, including the famous ejector seat that is used in Goldfinger.
Also, machine guns behind the headlights.
Yeah, that's another big one. Tire slashing hubcaps, revolving license plates, smoke and oil slick defense tools. So if you've ever played the old arcade game Spy Hunter, which had all of these sort of things and either on its car or enemy cars, it owes everything to this to this movie.
Also Mario Kart, I think. I mean, it didn't have any banana peels or turtle shells.
But, no. I mean, if only they'd had a couple of red turtle shells, Bond would have just sailed right through all those problems.
That flipping license plate thing, by the way, is a real thing in China. As of 2008, Chinese police reported that they were having a problem with a lot of people installing these remote-controlled plate changers that only cost about, like, $100 to $400 at the time.
So that way they could drive under a fake license plate and then switch it over to a real one or something.
Interesting. To avoid getting tickets.
Wow. And also there was the Aston Martin, although we do identify that very strongly with Bond in the books, it was a different type of luxury car that was used in most of the novels, which were Bentleys.
Yeah. Definitely for the first few. I'm not sure if
it stuck with that for the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, but for the first like four or five, I think.
Yeah, before they started getting upgrades to them, because again, in the early books as well, they weren't so tech heavy.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And Bentley, by the way, also British car company. So not a big surprise there.
Yeah, also gorgeous. It's not just like, oh, only a Bentley. Also, about this specifically, listener Mike Goldenberg on Twitter asked if any cars with weaponry and ejector seats exist in real life. And, okay, so the Mythbusters did create a car with an ejector seat.
Yep, they cut a hole out of the roof of a car. They built the ejector seat. They put Buster in it. The whole rig weighed about 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. They calculated how much rocket power was going to be needed to eject it, and they put the rockets into the seat, and they tested it, and Buster flew out. So everything's awesome, right? It works perfectly.
Aside from the part where it filled the entire cabin of the car with flames.
Yeah. As it turns out, it probably would burn you pretty badly. Now, granted, if you came up with some other ejector method, like you had built some sort of super powerful air catapult, or if you had just a really strong spring that was held into place with latches that you could unlatch, you might be able to eject someone from a car without filling the car also with deadly flames. But that's... You know,
I'd say it's probably a bad decision.
Yeah. Let's just say that it's not something you're going to commonly find in vehicles. And spies do not usually drive around cars that have that.
Oh, spies, by the way, usually don't drive around incredibly flashy sports cars.
Yeah, it turns out those get attention just like always winning at the casinos. So,
yeah.
But all right. So there are some other gadgets in Goldfinger that we should talk about. There's the homing beacons, which these are a thing. So the homing beacons in Goldfinger, I think, were transmitters that they could pick up via satellite, which, you know, not that unusual. I mean, other than the fact that trying to transmit a signal that can be picked up by a satellite is a little challenging. But, you know, now today we could totally have these kind of beacons, but they'd be operating on various wireless frequencies where you might even get GPS data from a satellite, but it's not beaming information back to the satellite. Instead, it's beaming information to somewhere nearby.
Right. As of the year that Goldfinger came out, GPS was actively guiding U.S. Navy ships. But this was called the Navy Navigation Satellite System.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of using GPS as we know it today, it evaluated Doppler shifts in signal from satellites with precisely known orbits. And it wouldn't be more precise until we got into the kind of GPS that we know today in the 1980s.
Yeah, and even then, I mean, military obviously would have had access to the best of the best. It wasn't until the late 90s that we started seeing that creep into markets where we could make real useful we could really take advantage of GPS, because before that it wasn't so accurate that you could do like turn by turn directions.
Yeah.
It could tell you if you were in the general area, and that was the best. At any rate, homing beacons, I mean, there are plenty of things that can give off a signal that, depending upon how far away you are, you can totally track it. So that's not that far-fetched. Although, of course, the ones that appear in the Bond movies tend to be smaller and more versatile than what you actually get in real life.
And for specifically 1964, it was a pretty impressive feat.
Oh, and also, since we didn't delete this one, I have to bring it up. It's not really a gadget, but it is one of the early ridiculous examples of Bond technology.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the camouflage wetsuit. What makes it camouflage?
It had a rubber duck on top of it.
Yeah. Bond kind of throws it away in disdain. But yes, it was a wetsuit with a rubber duck on it.
I did not delete that from our notes because I felt like it was really probably the most important of all the technology that we will be talking about today.
It's fair. It's fair. It's early, but it's fair. All right. We're moving on to 1965. This is Thunderball. There was some tech in here that was definitely a little more far-fetched, particularly
sci-fi-ish,
for the time.
Yeah.
They had a homing pill, which was something that Bond could swallow, and it had a homing device in it. Being able to create a pill that would have a device strong enough to emit a frequency that you could pick up from any distance is problematic, because where do you get the power source?
Yeah.
What's powering it?
Which is the problem with a lot of these very small gadgets that we're going to be talking about, is really the power source capacity that even today we don't fully have worked out.
Yeah, we could miniaturize the electronics, but miniaturizing the power, the battery technology has lagged well behind other technologies. And we all know this. It's one of the big challenges with today's electronics, is that we can make incredibly powerful electronics, but often the battery has trouble keeping up with the pace. So that would have been a big issue. A lot of the sort of stuff that you think of, like the biomechanical type pills that doctors are using today to track things in experimental clinical trials, are passive in
right.
that you're using a giant system that can track the pathway of the pill, but it's because the giant system is sending in signals that bounce off the pill, like ultrasound or something
right.
like that. So a little tricky. He also has a rocket belt where it's like a little jetpack, and it allows him to escape after he kills a bad guy. And here's the thing. It was a real jetpack. It was actually based off of, in fact, it was a Bell Aerosystems rocket belt. And that was something that Bell Aerosystems had developed for the U.S. Army specifically to let people do really short jaunts. I'm talking about like 20 feet. You couldn't go very far at all. You couldn't go very high and you couldn't go very far.
Yeah, but it used hydrogen peroxide as fuel.
Which was bizarre. And later ones used other types of fuel as well. But they never were terribly useful. It was very difficult to control. They're expensive. There was obviously there was the risk of injury. So, it was never anything that was adopted widely, but it's still kind of a cool sci-fi thing to have in a Bond film.
Sure. Other personal, motion systems involved in this film included an underwater jetpack.
Yep. Let him go through really fast.
Yeah. And, you know, the pack itself was still a little bit sci-fi at the time. I mean, we have personal diver jetpacks.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not jetpacks.
Not jetpacks, but like little, those little motorized assistant things that allow you to really
propulsion
zoom through. Yeah.
Packs. Yeah. And we wouldn't have something quite that small until 1969. So it wasn't that far off.
Right. There was a portable rebreather, or actually is an air supply is what they called it in the film, that would give just a short amount of air, like a couple of minutes worth of air, that could be used either underwater or if, say, you were in a room filled with poisonous gas. You would actually see this in a callback in a couple of other Bond movies, as well as a Star Wars movie, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, it was one of those things where, the actual spy agencies, after they saw this, started asking, hey, does this exist? Because we would totally use one of those. And it totally did not exist. This was a request, by the way, by David from Twitter. So, David, we totally wanted to cover it. But yeah, it kind of looked like two little CO2 canisters, like you would see in if you ever saw one of those slot cars that use the CO2 as the propulsion.
Yeah, sort of like a cigar container shape.
Yeah, the two small ones, and then they meshed together with a little mouthpiece thing that you would just hold in your mouth, and there's just no easy way of handling that, like the pressurized air, which is kind of It would not be pleasant. Never put your mouth on a CO2 canister is what I'm saying. For one thing, you're going to freeze yourself. For another thing, you're going to suffocate. And for a third thing, your eyes might pop out of your head, because that's a lot of it. That's a lot of gas going into you all at once.
Important safety tip. Thanks,
yeah,
Jonathan.
You're welcome. So it reminds me of that time when you tried to drill a hole in your head. So there's also a cassette recorder hidden in a book, which is totally legit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, spies, like a big thing in spy technology is all about surveillance and hiding things in mundane objects, like
sure,
hiding equipment in mundane objects. So not at all a stretch.
No, although, again, I'm not sure if in 1960, whenever that's
64,
that
I think.
64, thank you. I'm not sure if that level of miniaturization would have been possible.
Yeah. So and also they had the skyhook system. Now, this is super cool. This is the idea where James Bond has this harness and it can hook up to a line that's a tether. The other end of the tether is attached to a weather balloon. Releasing the weather balloon goes up, the balloon goes up into the air. It does not, it's not enough to lift James Bond.
No, but Bond can then signal a local airplane.
Yeah, and the airplane flies by and it's got a hook on it that hooks this tether and pulls James Bond off his feet, flying up through the air. And actually, in this case, he's got a lady with him, which is not a big surprise if you watch the James Bond series. And you might think, well, that's kind of cool. And I've seen that in other movies, too. There were, you know, there are other examples. There was a in one of the Batman films. There was
sure.
an example
yeah.
of this.
Yeah. And that's because it totally exists.
Yeah. This was actually invented by someone we've talked about before, Robert Edison Fulton Jr. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it's because you listened to our flying car episode mm-hmm. where we talked about how he was one of the early inventors of a flying car that never got off the ground. And at any rate,
I love it when you judge yourself for puns. That's true.
So he developed this particular technology for the CIA. So it was actually built for spies. So cool that it actually shows up in a movie and that it's, you know, pretty much the way it works with some they took a few liberties, but
yeah,
more or less it's the same concept. Then we get to You Only Live Twice in 1967. Now we get the what I called in my notes the killer cigarette thingy.
I believe that was the technical term, in fact.
Yeah. He's got a cigarette that has a projectile in it that can fire via rocket, and it is accurate up to 30 yards. So I looked to see if I could find anything like this. There are some similar technologies, but nothing quite to the level of this. In 1954, Nikolai Kokhlov, who was sent by the Soviet Union at that time to assassinate a German anti-communist agitator, was carrying a very interesting weapon. It was a weapon designed to look like a cigarette case, but in fact, it was actually a gun. It could fire, depending upon which account you read, it either fired cyanide tipped darts, cyanide bullets, or a puff of cyanide. But at any rate, it's moot. Kokhlov decided not to assassinate the agitator. He actually turned himself into German authorities, handed the pack of the cigarette case over, the gun over, and sought asylum. So he was essentially defecting. It was yeah. it was a huge story at the time.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, there have also been single shot cigarettes, something that holds like a 22 caliber round that can be fired when an operative pulls a string with his teeth.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
So
it's realistic-ish.
Ish.
They also, he had a gyrojet rocket gun, which you might think, oh, well, there's no way this existed, except this totally existed. It's a little handgun that could actually fire projectiles that were rockets. It's not a bullet. You know, a bullet, when you fire it, a striking pin hits the back of the cartridge. It ignites the propellant. The gases that expand push the bullet out of the barrel, and it flies through and goes toward the target. In this case, it's actually a little rocket that the rocket fuel, solid rocket fuel, ignites, and it takes off from the gun. Now, these were developed both by the Russians and the United States, but never really became popular. And part of the reason was that they were not effective weapons at close range because they had very low muzzle escape velocity.
Right. They wouldn't really reach full speed until they were about 25 yards out of the gun.
Right. So unless your target was 25 yards or further away from you, the bullet was not going to strike with the full impact. And, you know, you can imagine this. Let's just imagine instead of a bullet fired from a normal gun where it's losing velocity as soon as it starts to exit the barrel, this is different because it's, fuel is inside the bullet itself. It's propelling forward. It was not terribly accurate. It was, not good at close quarters.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, that did mean that it was really lightweight and had no recoil, which was pretty awesome.
We'll be back with some more spy technology in just a moment after this quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and someone's not back with us. That would be Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is the first film, first James Bond film to that's officially in the James Bond canon that did not feature Sean Connery.
Yeah, that this would be On Her Majesty's Secret Service from 1969.
Yeah, with George Lazenby. And the reason for Connery's absence was because at this point he was becoming a big film star and could demand higher salaries. And so
he did.
Yeah, and they said, we'll go with someone else. So some of the gadgets in this film included radioactive lint, which actually was kind of a brilliant idea in a way. It was lint that had been irradiated that could be planted on a target's clothing, like in a pocket or something. And because of the irradiation, they would be able to track the movement of the target. They don't explain how they irradiated the lint or what kind of radiation it's giving off or whether or not you've just doomed this person with cancer. None of that's explained. But the idea of being able to hide the tracking device in such a way that it would just naturally feel like someone's...
Like part of someone's person, yeah.
Yeah, that was what was really kind of interesting. They had a safecracker device. It was this kind of like a cord that had a little grappling thing that would... grapple onto the combination dial and slowly turn the dial and start to judge through either mechanical stress or maybe even the sound of the tumblers, which numbers were the most likely to be the right combination. And it takes a really long time to work in the film.
But that's probably fair. It was one of those combination devices.
Yes.
And it also had a document copying mechanism attached.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly that's what I want in all of my safe-cracking tools.
Yeah, I hear that version, it was supposed to be like a liquid toner one, which would not have been terribly useful in the field, because if you tilted it, then all this toxic toner liquid would come out of it. But at any rate, it was an interesting idea.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, well, maybe not obviously, depending on how much you've read about Xerox Corporation, that kind of tech had been patented back in the 1940s, but as of the end of the 60s, it was still the huge office-sized ones that we still have around today.
Yeah, it wasn't something that you could fit into an attaché case.
Not at all.
All right, so something you could fit in an attaché case was the tiny camera that Bond used.
Yes. It wasn't even futuristic for the 1960s. Walter Zapp designed a sub-miniature camera in 1936 and helped start up the Minox company to manufacture them. It was definitely in use in World War II by spies. And, it used film about a quarter the size of 35 millimeter film. If anyone listening still remembers what 35 millimeter film looked like.
Or even what film looks like. What's also interesting is that that camera was originally made for luxury, vacations. It was meant for rich people to take.
In their pocket and just
right.
go. Yeah.
And, ended up being that spies were like, that is something
that
we want that one. Get us that one. Diamonds are forever. So guess who's back with us now?
Sean Connery.
Yeah, we missed him. So 1971, Diamonds Are Forever. Now, this one had some cool tech in it. There was a biometric fingerprint scanner in this movie, which today our iPhones have.
As a screen lock. Yeah. Crazy that the FBI would only start funding the development of the real tech as of like 1975. I think the first wide use of the system was in Japan in the 1980s by the police force over there. But
right.
So this was a few years ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was actually predictive technology.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have a laptop at home that has the little fingerprint scanner where you can log on that way. So it's totes a thing, y'all. Also, there was a ring, getting back into that, why are you grabbing so much attention for yourself, Mr. Bond? Q gave James a ring, I like to call him James, a ring that would allow him to, it would allow him to manipulate slot machines using electromagnets so that he would always win.
Because that's exactly what you want from a casino staff to notice that you're anyway.
I guess it was so that people would get attention to him so they come to him so he doesn't have to spend all that effort tracking them down, the way that every other spy in the world has to do. If I just make a big enough nuisance of myself, they'll come to me. I just have to escape 5 or 6 unescapable death traps and it's all good.
Aside from logistic reasons, why would this not work?
Okay, so the old electromechanical ones, I can't imagine.
Slot machines, you mean?
Yeah, slot machines, exactly. The old electromechanical slot machines, I can't imagine having an electromagnet being able to stop it at a specific point. But furthermore, today's slot machines are using digital circuits to determine whether you won or lost. So electromagnets, you could probably create an electromagnet strong enough to disrupt the machine.
Yeah, you could probably mess up that screen real good.
But it wouldn't pay out.
Yeah.
And also you would have very large men with no necks wanting to speak with you very shortly after you pulled that kind of stuff. Moving on to the next film, Live and Let Die. Okay, so Sean Connery's gone, and now the greatest James Bond in all of cinematic history joins us.
I'm not sure whether you're being sarcastic or not right now, and that's delicious. Roger Moore we're talking about.
He's the James Bond of my childhood.
Wow.
He was James Bond when I was a kid growing up, so he is... I don't really think he's the best James Bond. I think the most of the Roger Moore films are ludicrous, but I also enjoy them for that specific feature. So Live and Let Die had a couple of different weird gadgets in it. There was a Rolex Submariner watch that had an electromagnet in it. Now, this electromagnet didn't let James Bond win it at slot machines.
It let him deflect bullets.
In theory. Although James Bond immediately says, this is totally not going to work. And, it totally wouldn't work. You would not be able to create... First of all, you would never be able to pack in enough power for an electromagnet in watch format to do anything to change the trajectory of a bullet.
Of a fast-moving projectile, yeah. It's not... It's basically just not ever going to be Wonder Woman's wrist bracelets. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. I'm sorry, too. Because, as long as I can still have my lasso of truth. That's all I really want. Also the watch was capable of acting as a buzzsaw, which could cut through cable. And both of these things would require so much power that, again, where do you get the power? Where do you fit a power source in something that small that could do this? Because if you're talking about a buzzsaw, you need torque and speed to make that effective. Right. So
that's a physics issue, I think, not a miniaturization issue the way that we've been talking about with some of these.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could put a saw blade on the side of a watch face. I just can't imagine you being able to turn it fast enough.
Yeah, you could probably just manually cut stuff with it.
Right.
Very
yeah,
slowly.
That's true. But, they also had a special clothing brush that hid a radio inside of it, which, again, not a big surprise. Surveillance, again, radio transmitters that are disguised as other things. That's totally a real spy thing. Mm-hmm. They had a shark gun that shot pellets that expelled air at high pressure, which would make targets explode. I don't know how that would work.
This is another physics issue. I don't think that that's how.
How could you create a pellet that's small enough to be fired by a gun and yet hold enough pressurized gas so that it could blow up a target and yet not explode when you fire the gun? Like, even if you were able to pack compress air that tightly into that small of a package, if it's supposed to explode upon impact, or not even impact, if it's supposed to embed into a target and then explode, I just don't see how it would work.
Maybe if it contains a small portal to another dimension, like a wormhole, and that dimension is just filled with highly pressurized gas.
All objections are lifted. Thank you, Lauren. And there was also in that film the deadly Cadillac Eldorado.
It fired poison darts out of its side mirrors.
Yeah, that was one of the bad guys' cars. I would like to think that that's exactly the Eldorado you would have won in Glengarry Glen Ross if you had made the most sales that month. First prize is an Eldorado that shoots poison darts.
I don't know. I think I could use one of those in Atlanta traffic. I think I would enjoy it.
Well, just remember, third place is you're fired. The Man with the Golden Gun, 1974.
Still Roger Moore.
Yeah, this is the Golden Gun is one of those, again, sort of those iconic things that you think about in the James Bond series if you're a fan of the full series. The Golden Gun, it was a super cool concept. And, of course, the bad guy in this film was such a great marksman that it didn't matter that the gun could only hold one bullet at a time. You had to reload after every shot. The gun itself could be disassembled, and each part of the gun was disguised to look like something else. The gun's barrel looks like it's a pen. The handle looks like it's a cigarette case. The chamber, the firing chamber, is a cigarette lighter. And the trigger is a cufflink. So, you know, you take it all apart and suddenly it looks like regular stuff that's made out of gold. Also, his belt buckle held bullets.
That's both fashionable and
deadly.
Yeah.
So... this particular type of gun, I mean, obviously these parts, you could, in theory, machine parts that look like this sort of stuff. And a lot of guns are meant to be disassembled. You'd take them apart, especially if you want to clean them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is unheard of. However, you know, you wouldn't really be able to use these things. Like, they wouldn't have any utility outside of being a gun because you couldn't build all that stuff in.
It would be very, very difficult at any rate. I can't imagine.
And you'd have to use materials that could withstand the pressure of a bullet. You know, I mean, you were talking about that rapidly expanding gas that propels a bullet. So whatever you're using has to be strong enough to contain that.
I assume that gold is actually a terrible choice for that sort of thing.
Yeah, it would have to be like gold plating. It couldn't be made of gold. It would be a bad choice.
But even if this golden gun could not exist, that kind of gun that is disguised as another object, like I was talking about that single shot cigarette gun earlier.
I also saw single shot lipstick guns that were popular with Russian spies.
Mm-hmm.
And also there was a great one that both Russians and United States developed, guns that were in the shape of pipes, like the kind that you smoke. Smoking pipes. And you would just take the little pipe stem off and with a quick twist of the pipe, it shoots the one bullet. And yeah, it had to be really close for it to work. It didn't have very good accuracy.
Yeah. I'm suddenly even more afraid of Matt Frederick than I have been previously.
That's understandable. So then there is the Solex Agitator. This was a device that was part of the Doomsday machine in The Man with the Golden Gun. In this case, it was a tiny little thing that could somehow harness huge amounts of the sun's power and then devote it to something else, whether it's for energy or, say, a heat ray or a laser. So, the Solex Agitator is one of those things that I wish we had. I wish our solar technology was that efficient.
That would be really nice. To work on that science.
I wouldn't want it to blow stuff up, mind you. I just want it to provide energy.
Jonathan, don't lie to our
listeners.
Maybe
blow a few things up.
Okay.
All right. Then there was the AMC Matador car, which converted into a flying car with wings and jets. For more information on that, just listen to our flying car episode. And we'll talk about how problems with flying cars. That brings us to the last movie on our list for part one, The Spy Who Loved Me.
That was a 1977 film with Roger Moore yet again.
Yep. And this one is the one that that kind of inspired us to talk about this episode. When the news broke this year about a particular vehicle that's featured in this movie, there were a lot of people who wrote in and said we should cover this topic. And so the Lotus Esprit was the car in the film that was able to convert into a submarine.
Yes, I believe this was the first time that the Lotus was used in a James Bond film, and it would continue to be their marketing partner for the next couple, I think.
Yeah, it shows up at least once more, if not more than that.
Although Lotus has never created a model that is convertible to a submarine.
Didn't stop Elon Musk from buying it, though.
He bought
it and said that as a boy growing up in South Africa, it absolutely captured his imagination to see this vehicle turned into a submarine. It also had torpedoes, landmines, machine guns, and missiles. It could also blast out cement that could act as either a smokescreen underwater or completely coat the windscreens of other vehicles and obscure their view. And so the nickname for the car is Wet Nelly. Do you know how much he spent to buy this car?
I do not.
$997,000.
Wow.
Just under $1 million.
That's a lot of money.
So
that's a whole bunch of money.
Lauren, but if you're Elon Musk and you've just bought a famous movie car that in the movies can convert into a submarine, but in reality cannot convert into a submarine, what do you say?
Screw it. I'm turning this into a submarine.
That's exactly what he said. He said, you know what? I am a rich man with lots and lots of ambition. I am going to turn this into a for real submarine, if that is at all possible. And I'm going to replace the drivetrain with a Tesla motor drivetrain. So it's going to be an electric vehicle.
Top Gear actually totally built out a replica Lotus, and it in fact worked underwater in that it moved under its own power and did not drown the driver for a very short period of time while it was in testing mode. I'll link it on social. There's a really terrific video. There's water actually coming out of the key ignition into the cabin.
It's not a good sign.
And listener Thomas on Facebook wrote in about this one and said, well, who doesn't want to be able to change to submarine when the Californian traffic gets too stressful?
No joke.
I agree.
So a couple of other little things that happened in this movie. There was one point where James Bond uses a ski pole that ends up being a gun that can fire multiple shots from the handle. I look at the pictures of this because I don't remember. I mean, I've seen this movie, but it's been so long I don't remember it, this particular scene. But all the shots looked really awkward. Like, it would have been really hard to aim that particular gun.
Skiing confuses and terrifies me to begin with, so I don't think it's a very good plan.
Yeah, they also had a special Seiko quartz watch that had a teletape printer.
Seiko, another big marketing partner with the James Bond series at this point in time.
Yeah, it looked like labels, like a label maker. That's the kind of paper that came out. It wasn't really paper. It looked more like a label maker type
thing. Quite ticker tape, the way that it probably would have been.
More like, you know, where the letters had been stamped, so they're raised up a little bit. You know, like that kind of old label maker.
That's even more.
Yeah, you wonder
how much
paper could a watch hold?
And if it's raised, I mean, if it's actually embossed, then I mean that requires a stamping action.
Exactly.
I mean, that requires some kind of swing and motion.
Well, clearly, Roger Moore's left arm is hollow and has all the working technology necessary to print on this stuff. They never explore it in the movies. They don't tell you about that.
It's clear.
It's,
I mean, it's
obvious.
It's given.
It's subtext.
Right.
Also, there was a Soviet agent who had a cigarette that he could blow through and stun gas would come out of it. I love that there's like just this knockout gas that apparently all it does is render you unconscious.
Completely harmless other than making you briefly unconscious.
That wraps up part one of Tech Stuff Bonds with Spy Technology. We will visit part two next week. Hope you guys enjoyed. If you have any suggestions for topics I should tackle on future episodes, maybe you think I need to take another look at spy technology. Maybe there's something totally different. Well, let me know. The best way to do that is on Twitter with the handle TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network.